Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No, we have something better than the Battle of the Bands and the Battle of the Boroughs. It's the Battle of the Mayoral Hopefuls. And New York City public advocate and mayoral hopeful Bill de Blasio is back with us. His number one issue by which he was distinguishing himself from Christine Quinn, the city council speaker, was paid sick leave. But now that Quinn has agreed to a paid sick leave compromise bill, is that issue off the table? We'll talk about that and more with Bill de Blasio now, public advocate. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And first, do you have a reaction yet to the indictments being announced this morning of State Senator Malcolm Smith, City Councilman Dan Halloran, and others for Smith allegedly bribing people to get him on the Republican mayoral primary ballot?
Well, we've seen a lot of problems with Malcolm Smith for a long time, but I think the bigger point here is the problem with member items, you know, with these discretionary funds at the disposal of individual elected officials. And certainly in the city council, this has been a problem for the last few years, and it's gotten worse. We've seen a number of council members indicted, one recently convicted, Larry Seabrook, and it says that something's not right in the city council and the way that this has been handled. We need some very, very substantial reform of the member item process, and you know, we have to consider whether it's even possible to continue on this path if we can't get that.
Wait, are you trying to make this a Christine Quinn issue?
Well, I think what we saw here today, again, one part state, one part city. But there's no question in the case of Halloran, he is one of a number of council members who have gotten into legal trouble over the use of member items, and something's wrong at the city council. It's as simple as that.
Member items being basically discretionary funds that each member of city council can use in his or own way, in his or her own district. But that's not the same as this, which is an indictment that Halloran was acting as a go-between between Malcolm Smith, who wants to run for mayor as a Republican, and these Republican county chairs who would need to approve it.
But the memorandums were part of the tool of the deal, and once again, it points out how pernicious this reality is when it's not controlled, and it certainly has not been controlled locally properly.
What would you do as mayor about that?
Well, you know, I've proposed a series of reforms as public advocate to the member item process, and I think there's a lot more to be done to make it entirely transparent and with real restrictions on it. And it was short of that, you have to question whether it's a meaningful thing to have going forward. There are some good things that happen with this money at the local level, little leagues and, you know, youth groups and senior centers, but unless it's tightly, tightly controlled, we're going to have this kind of corruption continuing.
All right. Here is Speaker Quinn announcing the paid sick leave deal last week.
I've always said that I supported the goal of paid sick leave. So the question for me was never a question of if, only a question of when and how. And I'm so grateful to everyone who has worked to get us to this right time in this correct way.
So, Bill de Blasio, is paid sick leave now a resolved issue?
No, not at all. Look, for 3 years, a very valiant coalition of women's organizations, labor, progressive activists, and I'm proud to say I was a part of this coalition, fought for a vote on this fundamental issue because we're trying to address the larger problems of income disparity in this city and what this economy has done to people all over New York City. And for 3 years, Christine Quinn would not allow a vote on the bill. So I applaud the coalition for getting something done. But the issue itself now continues. In fact, I think the coalition will continue its work because a number of New Yorkers were not included in this bill and because it will take years for this bill to even take full effect. And you know, Brian, there is a kind of poison pill piece in this in terms of economic indicators where the bill may never take effect. And so, look, I've said very clearly, when I'm mayor, we're going to pass full paid sick leave for all companies, 5 employees and up, that takes effect right away. And that's a fundamental contrast with Christine Quinn, and that's going to continue to be an issue as people consider who they want to lead this city.
The bill in its final form covers companies with 20 or more workers, and it does get suspended, as you were alluding to, if the economy goes sour beyond a certain point. And my understanding is no one will be allowed to be fired anymore at any company for taking unpaid sick leave just for calling in sick for a few days. In terms of Speaker Quinn's candidacy, her supporters would say she has shown herself to be a leader who can broker compromise agreements and protect both labor and business interests to a large degree. Should she not be seen that way and given that credit?
She showed herself to be fundamentally undemocratic. It took her, you know, 3 years and immense public pressure brought by, again, a very powerful and impressive coalition. People like Gloria Steinem calling her out and saying, you know, she was putting her own political needs and ambitions ahead of the needs of women. That's what finally broke this. If Christine Quinn had had her way, there never would have been this bill. And people have been hurting for these last 3 years. You know, I've at many of these mayoral forums, I challenged her on her unwillingness to act, and she said, well, we have to wait till the economy is better. And what I used to say was, you know, in the Depression, the government didn't say, well, we'll help people when things get better. You know, we'll get around to helping you when finally things are better. It makes no sense. We have to help people in their moment of need. So I actually think as a result of this fight, that the reality of Speaker Quinn's lack of leadership, lack of willingness to pursue a real democratic process here has been laid quite bare. And I think New Yorkers noticed and will remember.
Capital New York analyzed the moment in terms of the mayoral race, saying you'll now focus more on finding other ways to distinguish yourself from Speaker Quinn, including education policy, Ray Kelly, and progressive taxation. Would your list of differences with her, other than this issue, start with those three things?
Well, and that's where the debate was for quite a while before paid sick days heated up just in the last couple of months. Look, I went before the Association for a Better New York, which is, you know, the elite business civic group in this town, back in October, and I called for a tax on upper-income New Yorkers, those who make a half million or more, so we could have full-day universal pre-K and we could have after-school seats for every middle school child who needs it. Christine Quinn's made very clear she would not tax the wealthy. I think that's going to be a huge fault line in this election. Obviously, she has been very approving of Bloomberg's education policies. I think we've missed the boat entirely on early child education, and we wasted a lot of time, for example, with the Kathy Black episode where I challenged Kathy Black, and Quinn was only too happy to embrace her. So we've seen a series of differences on willingness to tax the wealthy, on whether we're going to change education policies, on income disparity questions like paid sick, also living wage, where Quinn watered down that bill to the point that it only affected a few hundred workers. I'd like to see a much more expansive use of living wage to give real economic opportunity. I think there's a lot of contrast that will be clear to Democratic voters.
Let me do one more issue with you. I want to play for you a moment from one of the recent mayoral candidates' forums, and I know they're endless, and you guys are like a traveling roadshow at this point, and I'll be moderating two of them later in the month, so I'll see you there. But this involves two of your other rivals, former controller Bill Thompson and current controller John Liu. This issue is stop and frisk, and they differ here on whether to end it, as John Liu proposes to do, or amend it, as Bill Thompson proposes. Listen to this.
Support stop and frisk. Don't understand how humiliating it is. Bill, I have to say this. Every time you talk about your 15-year-old, I feel terrible. I feel terrible that he has to live in a city like this, and a young man like your son would have to go through the potential of being stop and frisk. Bill, I want you to join me, because I feel lonely. No, I'm the one who has to worry about my son being stop and frisk. I'm concerned about my son also being shot by somebody who's a member of a gang in the streets. And at the same point, I don't have to sacrifice his constitutional rights to make sure he is safe. I don't have to sacrifice. I can have them both.
Bill Thompson second, John Liu spoke first. That recording courtesy of Ozzie Paybera from Capitol, New York. We originally aired the clip last week, as some of you heard. And we just have a moment left. Public Advocate de Blasio, but we thought that was a remarkable moment that the candidate who actually has a black teenage stepson in New York City raised the issue of crime alongside stop and frisk. Unlike Controller Liu, you also have a black son in the city. Many people know you. Your wife is black. Your son is, you know, likely to be identified as black by most people, somebody who might be more likely than others to be stopped and frisked. And since that clip was the last moment of that forum, and so you didn't get a chance to respond, I would love to get your response now. I know you've also called for fixing stop and frisk, not abolishing it. Where do you come in on the Liu Thompson discussion there?
Well, simply this. I have had the conversation with my son. He's 15 years old. He's over 6 feet tall. He clearly is the kind of young man who would potentially be stopped. And I've, you know, told him to be very careful and make no sudden moves and be very deferential to the police if that happens. But it is a painful discussion to have, because it's a given that it's going to happen at some point.
But what's the policy issue? What is fixing stop and frisk look like?
We need a fundamental reform in stop and frisk, a great reduction in the use of it, so it's actually being used the way it's meant to in pursuing specific suspects. I don't agree with John Liu. Abolition of stop and frisk would mean that the police could not use a valid policing tool, even if they did so constitutionally. I think that's a mistake. It is, and I think Thompson makes a fair point. We have to fight crime every single day, fight gang proliferation, etc., while respecting constitutional rights. So it's a basic reform of stop and frisk. It's obviously also an inspector general for the police department and a new police commissioner ready to return to a focus on police community relations.
Public advocate Bill de Blasio. We'll keep talking during the year, and I'll see you at those two mayoral forums, one on housing on April 10th, sponsored by the Furman Center, and one on April 22nd on sustainability post-Bloomberg, sponsored by the League of Conservation Voters. So I'll see you then. Thank you for joining us today.
Back to the Traveling Road Show.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And again, listeners, we will cover the news conference next hour by the U.S. Attorney for New York, Preet Bharara, on these indictments on the Republican side of the mayoral race. So stay with us for that. But up next, a very special guest, Maya Angelou. She turns 85 this Thursday, and she joins us in just a minute to talk about her life and new memoir. Stay tuned.